Chico Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. We are live here at Frog and Firkin for another Bear Down Thursday. Or not, it is Bear Down Thursday today, but we're always here on Thursdays. I'm Justin Spears, joined alongside here Ryan Finley and Michael Lev. We are part of the Wildcaster and Tucson.com and the Arizona Daily Star. You can download the Wildcaster app that's available on the App Store and Google Play, and also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. So we are here live at Frog and Firkin. They are always amazing, letting us use their spot to host a live podcast at noon every Thursday. Happy Thursday, guys. How's it going?
Is your point that every Thursday is Bear Down Thursday for us?
Kind of.
We're just always on that grind.
Yeah. Happy Thursday, Ryan.
Hey, what's going on?
How's it going?
Good.
So we are here for another Thursday podcast live at Frog and Firkin. The Arizona Wildcats getting ready to take on the Colorado Buffaloes. Real quick, is this a must-win for Arizona this week, considering the rest of the schedule? Because we have Washington State next week, and then you look ahead to Arizona State.
If you want to make a bowl game, it's 100% a must-win game.
Yeah.
Because if they lose, they're 4-6. They get a bye week, which can't come soon enough. They're, I think them and one other school, I can't remember, maybe it's Washington, the last ones to get a bye. It's really weird to get a bye after game 10 of a 12-game season, but that's the way it is. But if you're going into that Washington State game at 4-6, they're going to be 2-touchdown underdogs at least.
Yeah.
Assuming that Washington State doesn't, fall apart between now and then, maybe more than that. Always a tough place to play. Almost every trip up to the Pacific Northwest in recent years, whether it's been Oregon, Washington State, has been an unmitigated disaster for Arizona. So, yeah, if you want to get to 6-6 and make a bowl game, you better win Friday.
Mm-hmm. So Khalil Tate came back last week against Oregon, but it's not 2017 Khalil Tate, but he still did enough for Arizona to get the win. Michael Lev or Ryan Finley, what did you guys see out of Khalil Tate and the offense from last week against Oregon?
Sure. He looked healthier.
Yeah.
Right? When he did run, he looked faster, smoother. Both of his, significant runs, if you want to call them that, the ones that gained first downs, there was a defender nearby, and he had to elude them. And he kind of threw the stiff arm and was able to get wide and go around, which showed that maybe his speed is back. There was another play toward the what I would call the near sideline for the TV view, or our view from the press box, where he tried to get the first down and almost did, but he looked fast, right? So that's big. I thought his passing was okay. I mean, he was a little bit off at times, accuracy wise. The interception at the start of the second half is a prime example of that. I just wonder if Colorado is just totally spooked by, to use a Halloween term, by Khalil Tate because of what happened last year, right? I mean, that's got to be just, burned into their minds. Like, this guy, he tore them up. Mm-hmm. They obviously didn't know he was going to play.
They didn't see it coming. Brandon Dawkins.
But when he was out there, it was ridiculous. So they're going to, focus all their energy on stopping him, so that he has to be smart. And they have to be smart about how they use him, the types of plays that they call. And he can really kind of, be a really effective decoy in this game, setting up conventional running plays and play-action passes.
Yeah, I think he played better last week, but I'm not sure he played well. Arizona settled for a lot of field goals early. Probably could have won that game by more than it even won by. And, to me, heading into this game, I think Khalil Tate's going to have to improve. Clearly now he's healthier than he was. I think that we saw that last week. I think some of that explosiveness is back. I wonder about the willingness to run. I wonder about the willingness to take on tacklers. But again, like we talked about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, he's going to be motivated to go out and show up against Colorado. This is the kind of game that, if Arizona can win it, All of a sudden, you're looking at least a possibility of a bowl game, a somewhat favorable final two games. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, so much hinges on this year, on this game. You know, Arizona got it done sort of in all phases last week, and they'll have to do it again if they're going to win tomorrow night.
Rewatching the game against Oregon, you could see the effect that Khalil Tate has on an opposing defense, like how much attention they pay to him, whether he's, you know, running 20 times a game or not. Right, you could see it on running plays. You could see it on Shun Brown's touchdown was a great example. It's play action. You hold the mesh point. Shun sneaks behind the linebackers. He's wide open. Hit him in stride. Easy touchdown. Mm-hmm. That stuff is there as long as, you know, Khalil Tate is healthy and shows a willingness to run on just a handful of occasions. Doesn't have to do it 15 to 20 times, but if he can do it 8 to 12 times a game and look good doing it, that just affects everything that the defense does. They have to pay attention to him. They have to account for his running, and it just makes everything else easier for Arizona.
Going back to the memory of Khalil Tate's performance last year against Colorado, Brandon Dawkins gets thrown out of the sidelines. He's hurt. Then you put in Khalil Tate. Then all of a sudden he bursts for 327 rushing yards, an FBS record. Michael Lev, you were there in Boulder, Colorado last year. And since it is Thursday, we'll do hashtag TBT for Throwback Thursday. How was that game, watching that in person? Was that probably the best just single-person performance that you've seen covering college football?
Yeah, probably. I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about Marquise Lee's performance for USC against Arizona back in, what year was that, Ryan? Was it 2013? 2012. Yeah, somewhere in there. It was similar to that, but different in that it's the quarterback, and you just don't necessarily expect to see that happening. And every time I've rewatched the highlights of that game, he just looked like he was on another plane.
Like, you know what Madden. I mean?
Like, yeah, it was like the player that you create in Madden, and then you play on rookie level, right? And he's just like blowing by everybody. I mean, they couldn't touch him. Not only that, not only was the speed and the athleticism evident, but he finished that game by like running through like several Colorado defenders. That's the aspect of his game that we haven't really seen that much lately, and I'm not totally sure why that's the case. I don't know if it's the injury or the confidence wasn't quite there in his body for whatever reason, but it was incredible. He also completed 12 of 13 passes in that game. I mean, it was as close to a perfect game as a quarterback could possibly play.
Yeah,
We were in the office.
I wasn't there. In a way, I think he's been kind of chasing that game ever since. And you know, when we talk about, you know, it's so funny. Khalil Tate, you know, led Arizona to an upset win over the number 19 team in the country last week, right? And he played well, but you know, I think all of us go, well, you know, he could play better. Well, the reason we hold him to such a high standard is because, you know, starting with that Colorado game, we saw him do things last year that no ordinary human has done, right? I mean, between that and then UCLA the week after, it continued, you know, he almost single-handedly led Arizona to an upset over USC, you know?
Yeah.
To me, the reason the standard for him is so high and the reason why I think we've been so critical when even kind of he plays just okay, it's because we've seen what he's capable of. And that game certainly set the standard, certainly kicked into gear sort of, you know, the Khalil Tate that we all sort of think of when we think of Khalil Tate. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, the more games we get away from that, the further removed we are, I think the more we wonder who the real Khalil Tate is. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, that game is, you know, a top probably 20 sports moment in Arizona football history. Just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Maybe probably higher than that. I don't have the list in front of me, obviously. But I think you make a great point, Ryan, in that Khalil is sort of a victim of the standard that he set last year, right? He set the bar so high. You know, everyone expected him to do that sort of thing on a weekly basis. And then he did it for about a month. You know, I mean, he didn't rush for 327 yards, but he rushed for, what, over 200 against UCLA. He had, these, you know, just break off these 50, 60, 70-yard runs against just about everybody he faced. And you're just like, wow, this guy is just, he's the next superstar of college football, right? He's the next Vince Young or the next Lamar Jackson or the next Johnny Manziel or whatever.
Hand him the Heisman.
Right. According to SI.
Right. And then, you know, so bringing it, it's a great point. So bringing it to this year, I mean, that's a lot to handle you know, for someone who's, I think he just turned 20 now, right? Yeah. Isn't it like October 23rd,
I think it was his birthday.
So for a 19, 20-year-old, that's a lot to just process in your mind. Like, gosh, look at how much my life has changed. And, it'd be hard to not have that affect you in some shape or form, right? And it probably did to some degree, and it's probably been a really interesting learning experience for him and his family, and we'll see how he does down the stretch here.
You know, but outside of Khalil Tate, because, of course, whenever you talk about Arizona and specifically the offense, we're always going to talk about Khalil. Mm-hmm. But J.J. Taylor is fourth in FBS in rushing. Is that surprising to you? I remember there was points last year, and I think the biggest thing is yards after contact. I remember last year, J.J. Taylor, as soon as he got touched, he'd get brought down. Now it seems like he's adding a new element to his game, and he's actually getting more yards than usual.
He's first in the nation in all-purpose yards, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the total or per game, so that's rushing, receiving, and return yards. And when I saw that stat a couple weeks ago, I was surprised because I just sort of felt like he was just doing his thing, you know? Yeah. Like there was nothing out of the ordinary about it. What I've seen out of him is less of the spin moves and juke moves and more of the put my foot in the ground and get upfield, right?
So more north-south.
Little more, yeah.
East-west.
Right, which is one of those great football terms that Ryan probably likes when they talk about north-south versus east-west. But I've seen that growth in his game. Okay, that's number one. And number two, you have to remember last year he was coming back from a broken ankle. You know, he might not have been, you know, physically what he is now. He's a little bit bigger. You know, when he got here, he was 5'6", 160. Now he's 5'6", about 185, which still isn't big, but he's a lot bigger and stronger than he used to be. He worked on his speed in the offseason so that he wouldn't get caught from behind. Unfortunately, that did happen in the UCLA game. But it doesn't surprise me because I thought when I first saw him as a freshman that he was going to be a superstar here.
Yeah, I think it's funny to see how he's developed. You know, I think Rich Rodriguez got a lot of heat in Taylor's first year here for running him up the middle as much as he did, exposing him to the contact the way he did. I mean, if you look at that ankle injury when it occurred, I think it was against Washington back in 2016. It was because he was running between the tackles like on almost every play. To see him develop into a guy who's become a very good between-the-tackles runner, a guy who does initiate contact, a guy who's fit, as physical as he is fast, to me, that's the development, the natural development of a good running back. And again, at his size, I'm not sure if J.J. Taylor will ever be considered one of the top NFL prospects among running backs, but my goodness, he's a very good college player, and I'm excited to see sort of how they use him going forward, too. I think when we talk about who has benefited maybe from this offensive change or who has rolled with the punches as they've changed the offense, I think we've seen J.J. Taylor. He's somebody who, seemingly most weeks we sit there and we go, well, there are these other guys who catch passes and these other guys who can do different things. J.J. Taylor's been consistent. He's been good, and his numbers certainly show it.
But outside of J.J. Taylor, would you maybe say a Sean Poindexter is up there as possible Arizona's MVP on offense?
I wouldn't say he's the MVP on offense. I'd say he's probably the most improved player on offense, and he's probably the guy who benefited the most from the system change in the sense that they're passing more than they did before. I mean, they were very run-heavy the last year plus under Rich Rod for, understandable reasons. I mean, they were really good at running the ball, so it made sense to do that. But they also seem to value the outside receiver in this offense a little bit more, whereas the slot guys were the ones who were kind of the featured weapons in the previous attack. Maybe they just didn't have anyone like some of the receivers that Rich Rod had early on, the Caleb Jones types, or you guys would probably know better than I would.
Dan Buckner.
Sure. Yeah. Those bigger type guys. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting about Sean is I feel like he's on the NFL radar now. Why not? Wow. He's 6'5", he's fast, he's shown he can catch the ball in traffic. You can go downfield and make plays. Really good kid, good attitude, hard worker. I think he's going to be motivated because of, his family situation and so forth. So it would be quite a story if that happened, given how his career started in college, being a, volleyball player at Cal Baptist and then being out of school for a couple of years, junior college and so forth.
Mm-hmm. He was also an old lady for Halloween. I was looking at like some of the players and what they were for Halloween, and I think Khalil Tate probably was the best one because he was Turk from Scrubs, and then PJ Johnson was
hula dancer, right?
Hula dancer,
yeah.
And then Sean Poindexter was like an old lady.
I feel like Justin spent a lot more time like just studying what the players' Halloween costumes were than I did.
Hold on, and tell the people, what were you for Halloween?
I was Buzz Lightyear. And my dog was Rex.
But what's even better is you're Buzz Lightyear every year, aren't you?
Yeah, because I got a Buzz Lightyear jacket from Disneyland like my senior year of high school. And ever since then, it's easy because you just put on a jacket and that's it. You're Buzz Lightyear.
What does a Buzz Lightyear jacket cost at Disneyland?
$60.
Okay.
So not like too bad.
That's not awful. I would have guessed more.
Yeah. So it's not too bad. That's not terrible. And it's consistent. I have a Halloween costume every year, and I know what I'm getting myself into. actually, let's shift gears over to the recruiting trail, because there was some news today. Arizona landed another commit for the 2019 class, and that is 6'4 guard Jamari Williams. Man, that guy's a big boy. And it fills a need, because Arizona, the offensive line, they're young, but they need some depth. You know, they have guys currently on the offensive line that they could use for next year, but it never hurts to have some guys that can back you up. And Jamari Williams, when I've from looking at his size and looking at his tape, he's got some size.
Well, let's face it. You know, the two areas where they need the most reinforcements are the offensive line and the defensive line. I mean, maybe that goes without saying. Maybe that's just always the case. Maybe that should always be the focal point when you're putting together a recruiting class, but those are the areas that were the most deficient from the previous regime. When the new regime got here, I think they sized things up and recognized that and then made that a focal point of their recruiting efforts. You want to have, about 15 or 16 offensive linemen, and they've been more in the 10 to 11, 12 range, and not all those guys have been healthy, so that is a huge problem. You want to be able to have three full units that you can run out there at practice and have maybe those last five guys be developmental guys. They're not there yet, but they're working toward that. And then the defensive line as well. I mean, we've been talking about it for years now. They need to get bigger. They need to have more guys. I know that PJ Johnson is technically a redshirt junior, but I don't think he's going to be here next year. And so that's going to be a really tough guy to replace. Where do you find more PJ Johnsons, Ryan?
Right. Well, the islands is where you find them.
Yeah.
To me, what's interesting about this particular recruit, and both of you guys know more about him than I do, you're not just taking a flyer on a big guy or on a JC guy or on somebody who maybe doesn't, I don't know, somebody who you kind of have to squint to see being a productive college player. I mean, this is somebody who literally a ton of schools were after. I mean, he had, dozens of offers, right? Louisville was sort of viewed one of the leaders aside from Arizona.
Yeah.
To me, you know, this isn't just and God bless, who's the Kansas JC guy who they got?
Oh, Rocky Etogi.
Rocky Etogi. World's greatest story, world's greatest backstory was a bodyguard for a rapper and all this other stuff. But he's very much a work in progress, very much a project, shall we say.
Yeah.
This guy seems like somebody who's a little bit less of one. Mm-hmm. And you need, projects make for great stories, but you need established players too. And for them to beat out, established good programs to get a guy who can help them right away, I mean, that's a really good sign. To me, that's one of the bigger recruiting wins so far for Kevin Sumlin. And, if he can tag four or five more guys kind of like that on top between now and signing day in February, then all of a sudden you've got something.
Assuming that Joe Gilbert is still the offensive line coach next year and in the future, I don't mind taking on some projects because I feel like he's done an amazing job with the group that he's had this year, right? I mean, you thought you'd have Nathan Eldridge, experienced center, coming back, injured, unable to play. Laith Freck, suspended for the first two games, in and out of the lineup because of ankle issues, basically no starting experience at all. You thought maybe you'd be able to get Robert Conjol eligible, guy who's familiar with Texas A&M system. Nope, couldn't get it done. They've obviously had their issues. They've had games where they've struggled, but look at the last two games. I mean, they've rushed the ball for almost 300 yards in each of those games. The offensive line's really coming together in a big way. I mean, of all the assistant coaches on the staff, wouldn't you say he's done the best job?
Yeah. I mean, because you look at, sort of what they've been able to do with the guys who they have, right? And so, They're running the ball better. I think, you know, when we try to explain why Khalil Tate had struggled earlier in the year, too, I mean, obviously his ankle injury is a big reason for it. I think a lot of it was sort of scheme, and some of it could have been stuff between the ears. But you know what? Let's not underestimate the value and the role of a good offensive line. You know, Khalil Tate has an extra half second on every play. Maybe he's able to do more, and that the offensive line struggled so much early on with injuries and other things. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that he is playing better now that they are playing better.
Or if you're running the ball more effectively, it makes your job as a quarterback that much easier. Those play action fakes, you know, they matter more when you've got a good running game going, and they've had that the last 2 weeks.
But I also like the mesh of guys that they're going after, the group, because not only are you seeing guys like Jamari Williams, who's coming out of high school, but they're going after a lot of junior college guys. One of them already committed, and our guy Rocky.
Love him.
But you know, they hosted one last week for the Oregon game. Goes by the name of Peyton Fears, which is a hell
good
of a
name.
Name.
Good football name.
Hell of a football name. And it's not a JUCO guy, but it is a big time high school prospect in Ja'Kai Clark, who was previously committed to Auburn. So if you could, and he posted his final two, it's coming down between Illinois, possibly playing for Lovie Smith, maybe, or Arizona.
I like Arizona's chances.
And and he also posted a photo on Twitter saying, I'm ready to make my college decision soon. Mm-hmm. And then the next tweet was him in an Arizona uniform saying, this might be it, hashtag bear down.
Right.
And then he's like, oh, well, and then also, by the way, I cut my final two schools to Arizona and Illinois. So I like Arizona in that position.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. You know, Arizona, I mean, compared to Illinois, Arizona's Notre Dame. I mean, when it comes to football and when it comes to recent success in football. This is why they brought Kevin Sumlin in. I mean, let's be honest, right? They brought him in to recruit. Rich Rodriguez is a dang good X's and O's coach. I think a really good in-game coach. Struggled like you wouldn't believe on the recruiting trail. This is why they brought in Kevin Sumlin, to get guys like that. And, you know, again, if he can continue to build this recruiting class to something maybe a little bit more towards what? Like low 20s, high 30s in terms of sort of national rankings. If he can get them into the 30s, that would be a good first full season for him, first full year sort of recruiting haul. And, again, this is a step in the right direction. I'm sure if my man picks Arizona over Illinois, that's another good one.
It's not like there is a bunch of four- or five-star guys in this class. I think they're all three stars pretty much. But you'd like to think that given the past successes that Kevin Sumlin has had in terms of bringing talent into his programs, that he and his staff have a good eye for talent.
Yes.
And right?
It's evaluation. I mean, let's... Right. Three-star, four-star, five-star, that's recruiting guy stuff, right? I mean, it's about evaluation. If they bring in three-star players who they think can play like four-star guys, if they're bringing – give me a two-star kid from Texas or a three-star kid from, say, Southern California over a quote-unquote four-star kid from anywhere else. You know, I think that's how you build good teams.
Yeah, well, they started, you know, to turn things around from a recruiting standpoint with the class of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I mean – all those guys who are contributing to the team right now who are sophomores, they're all three stars, right?
Yeah.
Right? Colin Schooler was a three star. Even the year before, J.J. Taylor, I think, was a three star, and he had hardly any big-time offers from anyone because he was small. So it always does come back to evaluation, and this coaching staff has a pretty good track record in that regard.
And they're going after size. That's also another thing that a lot of people don't really talk about for this recruiting class. They only have one player, one commit, that's under 6 feet. And he's a 5'11 running back.
Right. And so, that's good. And that's the thing, though, is when Rich Rodriguez was here, you know, he sort of famously did not care about size. You know, all of his running backs and all of his receivers were little fast guys because his offense, I mean, there wasn't as much of a premium put on, frankly, size. And, you know, his offensive linemen kind of varied in terms of size. To me, this is a much more traditional approach to recruiting, much more traditional offense than what Rich Rodriguez ran. And so, yeah, it is nice to see them getting bigger.
All right, guys. So since we have some time left, about 5 or 6 minutes left, let's talk about this game coming up tomorrow. Friday Night Lights for the first time in Arizona Stadium this year.
Right.
Last Friday game that they had, they went up to Salt Lake City and they got thumped. I would assume that this game could be a little bit different considering Colorado they lost the last three games. So they're hungry for a win, but they're also down right now. Is this the perfect opportunity for Arizona to get another win for this season?
Well, on paper it is. Yeah. You have kind of a wounded Colorado team coming in. Their confidence level can't be at maximum, you know, at maximum efficiency, right? Because you lose to Oregon State at home in that manner. I mean, that's a big blow. I'm a little worried, though, because, you know, we ran that story today from the AP about how they had a players-only meeting earlier in the week. They're really kind of trying to rally the troops in Boulder and pointing to this game as one that they can't afford to lose. They've lost, you know, they started 5-0. Now they've lost 3 in a row. So that concerns me a little bit. The possibility of Laviska Shenault coming back from injury concerns me. I mean, he might be the best player in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of position, when healthy. I mean, his numbers were out of this world as a receiver, and he's also their, you know, wildcat quarterback who, you know, converts a bunch of short yardage plays and has a bunch of touchdowns that way. He might be back, and that's a big X factor in this game. And my other kind of concern is, you know, can Arizona handle success, right? They have every reason in the world to be motivated and inspired and intense for last week's game. It's homecoming. It's Oregon. Everyone hates Oregon for whatever reason.
I don't. Go ahead.
But around, I don't know. For some reason, the players just got really amped for that game. Well, it's not homecoming. It's not Oregon. You're not coming off a two-game losing streak anymore. So how do you ratchet things back up? How do you capture that intensity? You know, so I guess my question for you, Ryan, is, mm-hmm. was last week's game against Oregon, was that a one-off or was that a turning point?
Well, if we look at their season so far, I think it's a one-off, right? I mean, they played better last week than they had at any point this year. I mean, I would argue that they may have played better against Oregon than they did against Southern Utah. In terms of completeness, right?
Even better than they did against Oregon State.
Right.
They gave up 31 to Southern Utah.
Right. Yeah. But here's the thing. You know, you are going to have to show that again, right? If they can do it again Friday night, this is absolutely who they are. If they struggle Friday night, and I think it's close. I think Colorado wins the game. I do, because I think Shenault returns. If Shenault returns, he's the best player on the field. I think that he changes the complexion of that game. To me, you know, if Arizona can do it again, all of a sudden, really realistic expectations of 6-6 in the bowl game, and given where we were 2 weeks ago, that's not bad. To me, if Colorado comes out and struggles, again, you start wondering, well, you know, they're probably not going to win at Washington State. Can they beat ASU? You know, then maybe you're looking at 4-8, 5-7.
Man.
Something clicked in that game, though, right? Didn't you get that sense? I'm talking. You heard what the players talked about too, mm-hmm. like just some, especially on defense. Like
yeah.
something clicked. That's kind of what we were expecting this defense to look like from the get go. I don't know why it took so long to get to this point, considering that Marcel Yates was back. I don't know if it says something to do with just the way that they're communicating amongst each other. They're communicating the instructions from the sideline. They've just found the right mix of players. But if they can come close to replicating that performance against Colorado, I think they can win the game. I do think it's going to be really close, though.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see anything like what we saw last week, because this is a desperate Colorado team coming in here. I think Steven Montez, maybe he's not quite the pro prospect Justin Herbert is, but I think he's really close, and they're very similar physically. He's a really good runner. He's improved his passing a lot. The one worry I have from Colorado's side is their secondary is really banged up. They're missing a lot of key guys back there. So if Arizona can establish the run, I think there's going to be some opportunities to go over the top.
You know, Arizona, just looking at history, mm-hmm. anytime they have a huge win, mm-hmm. sometimes the next home game is always just a dud. I'm going back more than 10 years. Like, think about it. Remember when they beat UCLA 52-14? They were undefeated.
No, but go ahead.
Top 10 in the country.
Sure.
This is like 2005, Michael.
Right.
And then the next home game, mm-hmm. they get smoked by Washington at home. And Washington was one of the worst teams in the Pac-10 at that point. So a part of me thinks that it is a one-off for that Oregon game last mm-hmm. week. I just don't know if Arizona can put it together. It's kind of like a wait and see moment for this week.
Let's look at it this way. What last week's Oregon game showed us from both sides is you gotta come ready to play, right? You can't phone it in. You cannot show up and expect to win.
Yeah.
Right? The question becomes, does Arizona think it can just show up Friday night?
They shouldn't.
And expect to beat a Colorado team who hasn't beaten anybody good in a month.
They're sub 500. Right. They're sub 500. They shouldn't have that mentality.
That's exactly what I was going to say. They absolutely shouldn't. And all you got to do if you're Kevin Sumlin is go, look, you guys are still 4-5.
Right.
There is, like, let's not, you know, there's no reason to have a parade down down University here or Congress or wherever you'd have a parade here in Tucson. Where they're 4-5. They've only, that was their first win in 3 weeks, right? You know, he said after the game in his speech to the team, stay humble, stay hungry. You'd like to think they have enough veteran players who've you've been around a couple years now to be able to handle this situation and realize that they don't have it made just because they won one game in impressive fashion.
Right.
Quick score, fellas. Ryan, you say Arizona could lose.
I'll say 31-28 Colorado.
Okay.
I think it's, I don't know. I want to believe that Arizona is for real. I want to believe that a switch was flipped last week. They're going to need to prove it one more time before I'm a believer. And I think Colorado, like Michael said, is desperate. And if Chenault plays, and I think he will, there aren't a whole lot of players in the league better than him.
I'm going to say Arizona 28, Colorado 24. I am going to be watching the Colorado warm-ups almost as intently as I do the Arizona warm-ups to see if Chenault is out there because he is that much of a difference maker. Mm-hmm. I would also say that you have a bye next week. Throw it all out there. Give it everything you've got. There's no reason to hold anything back. You know, play with maximum intensity, energy, effort, etc., and then you can rest up the following week.
I'm going to say Arizona 23, Colorado 21. Josh Pollock makes a game-winning field goal.
Oh, look at you. Very nice, very nice. Before we go, by the way, can we give a shout-out to a reader?
Is that sure, okay? Absolutely.
P.J. Brown. P.J. Brown, she's usually here. A reader. We called her a reader. She's a listener. Sorry,
yes.
I'm a newspaper.
Listener. Mode. Colleague, even.
Colleague.
Colleague.
Colleague. She covers women's basketball for us. She's also a Wildcast listener. Usually comes down and says hello.
Yeah.
PJ, she has a bum ankle. She's going in for ankle surgery tomorrow.
Oh.
So she's sort of on the, let's say, the 15-day DL. I know that she wants to be here, but I know she's listening. So, PJ, best of luck and hurry back.
Yeah, well, soon,
get
PJ.
Off the IR. Get off the IR. All right, well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Thank you so much for the good folks at Frog and Firkin for listening, and thank you for this fine establishment for hosting us. You can download the Wildcaster app, available on the App Store and Google Play.
Right. I'm not going to stay hungry for very long looking around here at Frog and Firkin. Pretty awesome.
Good burgers. Yes. Good pizzas.
Good stuff.
And also subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Ryan, for Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Chico Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.